episode 3. My name is Dave Hunt. I'm one of your hosts, and I'm joined by Michael Swick.
I'm switching it up already, 2 episodes in, going with the DDG.
Yeah, trying to see. I just, you know, trying to give it its own style. You know.
Yeah. I'm proud of you.
Hey, he's proud of me. I've accomplished something. It only took 3 episodes. I win.
Yep. Got to start somewhere.
Yep. So, Michael is starting to get an Arctic freeze, and I think mine is on its way. So, it's November, so it's going to get cold in the Midwest where both of our, where we both live, unfortunately. So,
yeah, it's, I think 35 now. When we started, it was 40. It's 35 now. It's supposed to go below 20 with a wind chill of 0.
Wow.
So, fun.
That's crazy. So, all right. Just quick reminders, we do live stream this show on Twitch, twitch.tv/digitaldaysgaming. We are very, very close to affiliation, much closer than the goals that Michael and I laid out on paper originally. So that's a huge thank you to all the community members following, even popping in on the streams, keeping our average viewer count where it needs to be at. Affiliation is not something that's super challenging, but it'll be a great way for you guys to help support us in ways if you choose to. So hopefully by the time you listen to DDG episode 4, I think that we might be affiliated, but by 5 for sure.
Yeah, I believe hopefully by 5. I still have to figure out exactly the process, but I know we meet the requirements. So,
I mean, if I remember correctly from the previous ones that we got affiliations from, we ended up getting an email. So, but that always went through different channels, and now this is just the you and I channel. So
yeah.
We see the same thing sometimes. But we do have a lot of some cool news to talk about. Not necessarily a lot, but stuff that we, you know, again, that we feel is going to be interesting for us to have a conversation about and that you may or may not want to hear about. One thing I do want to talk about right at the beginning of the show is I'm not going to focus on Patreon all the time. We do have a Patreon, and it is available for you guys to help support us. A few of you have done that already. We will start some Patreon shout-outs probably next week as the list grows a little bit. But something that it is very important to us is feedback on our Patreon. So even if it's something that you may or may not support or you may support in the future, go and look at it, patreon.com/digitaldaysgaming, and see what you think of it. And send us some feedback, whether it's on Facebook or on Twitter, directly to us or at Digital Days Pod. I would like to know what you guys think. It's too much. That's too high. That's not enough. There, you know, or even suggestions for other tiers. So, like right now, we just have the dollar tip jar. We have the $5 Discord access that will link with Twitch subs as well through affiliation. We have, I believe, $7 for a bonus episode and $10 for early access to the podcast. 24-hour early access to the podcast. If there's another tier that you think should be in there, like we've always discussed other tiers of maybe a $3 one that maybe we try to get stickers or something like that of our logo or something to that extent, we are very open to feedback to see what you guys think or don't think if something's too high. The biggest thing that I will say off the bat is the 24-hour access is a physical time commitment for either myself, Michael, or Angela, my wife, who edits the show, to where there needs to be a little bit of, I feel like, oomph to edit the show quickly. I will say, with that in mind, we have figured out between the three of us that we can release the show on Thursday mornings now. That is something that is doable. So the show will begin to release on Thursday mornings. So Sunday nights will be on Twitch. And then when the show goes live on podcast feeds, it will also go live on YouTube, youtube.com/digitaldaysgaming. So if you want to subscribe to there as well, you can, and that's much appreciated. So that is going to be my little spiel right at the beginning. And we're going to go right into the news and more changes at PlayStation.
Yeah, we're not a PlayStation-centric show, but holy crap, PlayStation is constantly having stuff happening, especially at the worldwide studios and corporate level. So, the latest shakeup is Herman Hulst, the managing director at Guerrilla Games, is now going to be in charge of PlayStation Worldwide Studios. He's basically taking the job that Shu had, and he now will be the lead of basically the 14 studios under the Sony umbrella. So he will be the top guy that Shu used to be. And Shu is actually going to move into a new department or like a new position where he is going to be basically head of the independent outreach,
which I think is a great position for him.
Oh, it's fantastic, especially if you pay attention to like Twitter over the years. He's always shouting out independent developers. A lot of independent developers are constantly thanking him for the work he's already been doing with them. So now he's in that position. Doesn't seem like it's related to the third-party relations team, which I believe John Drake is in charge of, or at least, you know, on the North American side. But this move is just the strategy that PlayStation's taking, where they're just trying to go from having three different regions to just one region, one organization. And this is just another move towards that, which is why we've been seeing a lot of shakeup. But another person, Gio Corsi, he just left. He was one of the big third-party guys for PlayStation and one of the big champions of PlayStation Vita. He announced he's leaving this week. So a lot of movement at PlayStation the last year, which kind of makes sense. You're going into a new platform. This would probably be the time to leave if you do want to leave. Especially after the success of the PS4, I can imagine any of these executives can get a job somewhere else really easy and be like, hey, this was supposed to be the last generation of gaming. And we walked out on top and it was like one of the better generations sales-wise.
But it's also scary because it's a year from a launch of a new system. And the people that built that core base of what made the PS4 successful. And it, I guess, almost the number two best-selling console. I know, like, DS is up there and handhelds and stuff like that, but it can be a little worrisome.
Yeah, it could be a little worrisome with the idea that, like, it is a year away, and I guess the only good thing is they're just moving people around, so it's not like they're, like, injecting a new person into, like, PlayStation and being like, hey, you got a year to ship out this console. It's just rearranging. At least with this move, unlike, mm-hmm. you know, the Sean Layden move and a couple other moves, or like Andrew House leaving last year, at least this is just shuffling of people as opposed to people just outright leaving. But yeah, I wonder what this means for Guerrilla. Obviously, they're probably working on Horizon 2, but him leaving, I would assume he was a big part of Horizon and just, you know, Guerrilla in general. He has been, but it looked like they must have liked how he worked with Kojima during the Death Stranding stuff, since, you know, he was kind of a big part of that, or Guerrilla was, in terms of,
what was it, their entire engine essentially, right? Yeah,
giving their engine and basically pitching Hideo to like use his engine, and they must have noticed that at the corporate level of PlayStation, of like, hey, this guy is going to be a great ambassador for us. And he already works for us, so let's just, you know, move him on up. And then Shu can do what, like, Shu's kind of been doing, you know, best during, like, the PS3, PS4. And that's, like, working with developers. And hopefully they can win indies back, because the Nintendo Switch has kind of become the indie platform.
Right.
The last year or two.
And I think that's really what's going to, like, we already know that Sony's exclusives are going to carry any console that they release. Like, we know that that's going to happen. But I think that in order to take that next step, they need to step up their, you know, their whatever service they are, subscription-based service they are or aren't going to provide. I think they're kind of on their way with PS Now, but I almost feel like it needs to be called something else with PS5 at this point in time, because PS Now just has a bad mantra with it. And then just expanding their library and using indies to fill the gaps in between their huge releases.
Yeah, they need the indies to kind of hold down the fort. Why big games come out, especially, you know, PlayStation lets their studios take their time. So you need the indies, because that's what was so great about the PS4 when it first launched. There's so many indies, and the indies are still coming, but Nintendo's getting the timed exclusives, and PC's always going to do what PC does, and then Microsoft still gets indies, so it's just, they kind of lost that indie stride over the last, like, 2 years, but they've been hitting it really good with AAA games.
So let me ask you this, do you think that Sean Layden was holding up some of these moves from happening?
No, the only thing I can think of with Sean Layden is I think Sean Layden didn't really have the philosophy that like Ryan had, like the current of PlayStation. And PlayStation wanted to move into more global positioning. So I think as soon as they announced that they're going to like get rid of, you know, there being a Sony Europe, Sony America, Sony Japan, it was kind of only a matter of time before Layden had to go, if they were going to do that. So I don't think Layden was holding anything up. I just think when they decided to do this and then they re-looked at their tree, you know, their executive tree, they were just like, okay, we need to like condense this as much as possible. And unfortunately, Layden was one of the ones that, you know, his position was condensed. And they might not have known what to do with him, or they might, you know, or he might not have wanted to get moved wherever they wanted to move him. Especially he was huge on the cross, you know, the crossplay stuff, and he kind of bumped heads a little bit with Ryan Onnett, who was against it. It just happened to be when they finally did crossplay, it was around the same time that they had decided he was going to leave. So I think Layden was just like a victim of timing.
Yeah, I mean, because it looks weird with like Layden's announcement of leaving being very non-ceremonial. Like, we knew Trenton was leaving before he left. We knew Andrew House was leaving before he left. You know, like all that stuff. And then it was just like, Layden's gone. Thank you.
Yeah, it was all he got was a tweet, which I assume that means something happened suddenly. But I don't think Layden was holding anything up. It was more just we reshuffled. Maybe they offered him something. He said, nope. And they're like, all right, fine.
Right.
And they moved on and wiped their hands. And I'm sure Layden will pop up somewhere. Especially, you know, Stadia launches, what, next week?
Allegedly.
They can use another executive to help get things right over there.
Maybe somebody to let people play it.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
All right. So moving on, China's new gaming rules. I completely missed this story, and I didn't get a chance to look at it as you added it. So.
Okay. So the reason I added this is because it's been funny over the last couple years of all the game companies trying to break into China because there's like, you know, a lot of money to be had in China. And kind of plays into like Blizzard bending over backwards to appease China. And then China has set rules for people under 18, I believe it's the regulations are from like the National Press and Publication Administration. And basically it bans users younger than 18 from playing games between 10 PM and 8 AM. And they're not allowed to play more than 90 minutes on weekdays and 3 hours on weekends and holidays. And it also restricts how much you can spend on gaming in terms of microtransactions, pretty much, to where you can only spend $28 to $57 a month, depending on your age. The way the government in China is spinning this is they're just trying to combat video game addiction, which is becoming a really big problem for like young people. I just kind of found this hilarious just because all these video game companies are trying their best to break in because they want all the money, and then China is letting them in, but now like the bar graph just maybe got chopped significantly with these new rules, because all of the microtransactions, or most of the microtransactions for most games, are targeted towards children and taking advantage of that. And you know, adults too, like the whales that the mobile market calls them. But a lot of that stuff is geared towards kids. And China's, you know, trying to do their best to combat this in the most restrictive way possible. But I don't know. What do you think of like these rules for kids, basically?
I mean, like, we all know that like China's obviously like a very interesting country and how they decide to do certain things. I'm more curious is like, how do they actually physically limit this?
I mean, they're really good at having restricted internet, so I'm sure that this will have to play a part in it. I mean, they have a little bit more control over there, or significantly a lot more control over their people. So there's definitely going to be ways they can definitely get corporations to put these restrictions into anything sold in China. But I'm sure there's going to be plenty of ways around this.
That yeah, but say you said like 90 minutes a day of playtime, right?
Yeah. I'm wondering if it's just going to be on the parents to do this, or if they will put like timers and stuff, like parental control timers into software. And then you have to have the software in something that you sell in China.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, it's always interesting. I don't think, for the most part, I think from an addiction standpoint and things like that, like you always hear about the crazy, crazy stories, mm-hmm. the Fortnite people and playing all that stuff. You never hear about like the normal stories of the, you know, the kids that, you know, fully function and play video games, you know, even 3 or 4 hours a day and still have a 4.0 and stuff like that. You don't hear about those. You know, in terms of, I think you just have to know your kid. Mm-hmm. And controlling their media intake and things like that is all just from knowing your kids. Like, if your kid is going to watch a movie, and then for the next, like, 10 days, he's going to reenact things from that movie until he watches something else, and that's how he consumes media, then, yeah, I would be very concerned if you let him play a video game where he's allowed to, like, run around and shoot people in the head.
Mm-hmm.
But... you know, similar to like to my kids, I don't know as much with Owen right now as, you know, Owen is actually physically reenacting a lot of things that he sees on TV and stuff like that. But as he gets older, I wouldn't let him play a shooter at 4 years old anyways. But as he gets older, I'll be paying much more attention to how he consumes media. And on the reverse side of it, my son, who's 20 now, he did not, like, he would just look at it as media or look at it as a TV show, or he understood what was going on, and he seemed to have a grasp of that at a very young age. So he was able to play like Call of Duty and Battlefield when he was like 10 and 11 years old, despite my wife not being a huge fan of it. But it didn't cause any huge problems with him, and he's a good kid. You know, like, he's not that I want to jump on this tangent, but he's not one of these kids that plays video, or they're going to point at him for playing video games and say that that's why he went and did some violent act or something like that.
No.
So, and he's also not addicted to it. He's a fully functioning college student, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, as far as you can tell, he's doing that. I'm wondering if this is more, because the only way they're going to be able to regulate this is with, like, always online content.
Mm-hmm.
Even in an article New York Times posted with the rules, they said, like, this works, but kids are just going to play games offline or games.
I was going to say, can't I just play God of War without a cable plugged in?
Basically, is what it's going to come down to, is like, this is only going to really restrict internet connective games, which I'm sure China is, that's the thing they have the most problem with, because they're a very closed country, so internet connective games can lead to all sorts of things that they would consider issues, so they would want to limit that anyways. And most of the money that is going out of these games are going to other countries. So, this is just another way for them to restrict the type of media the people in China see. Yeah. I feel like it has more to do with that than it does with internet addiction. Because then if they wanted to, they could just, like, ban games, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I have a friend that I've played games with over the last couple of years. He lives in Korea. And he's told me before he's had to import certain games into, like, he's had to buy them from like a US Amazon site and pay for shipping and things like that to bring them to him, because they're not allowed to be sold in his country. Apparently they can be imported still, but they just don't want them sitting on the shelf depending on what happens in those games, or different versions of games are released in different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that before with like the Yakuza games, right?
Yeah, like, some stuff's edited out. I mean, you see a lot of stuff, Germany edits out a lot of different things. So it's not unheard of for countries to, like, edit out specific content.
Mm-hmm. So. All right, and now we are getting very close to Black Friday. It's a dreaded weekend for the two retailers that Michael and I work for. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that we're not going to be without some really cool deals to make me spend money mostly on myself. When I look at this stuff, I'm never really thinking about something being as a great gift for somebody else. It's like, do I need that? Is that a good price for that?
You worry about gifts for other people a week before Christmas. Black Friday is basically just a holiday for yourself. You just tell your loved ones, like, don't worry, I'm taking care of myself on Thanksgiving, on Black Friday. And as much as I hate Black Friday, there's some really good deals. And I'm looking at the Black Friday ads that have already come out, and I'm just like, damn, there's some things I need to pick up. We don't push affiliate links or anything like that, but there's a ton of deals. We don't have any. Yeah. Some of the stuff I've seen, the one that I was on Twitter, you know, like debating, PlayStation VR at Target is going to be $199. It's just the VR, with the camera. But it comes with Resident Evil, Astrobot, Hot Shots Golf VR, Skyrim VR, and VR Worlds for $200.
Yeah, you need to get that.
I think I might have to. I don't know. My big debate is, when will the new PSVR be out, and what features will it have? Will it be wireless? It's going to probably have a better screen. It's really tempting. other deals, in terms of consoles, the Xbox will have a bundle. The 1 TB Xbox One S will be bundled with Jedi Fallen Order for $199, and it seems like most stores are giving away some sort of gift card along with it. Kohl's has like a $60 gift card with it. Target has a $40 gift card. And Best Buy has something else with it. Oh, they're just selling the X with Star Wars for $350.
They're selling the discless thing for like $150 too, right? With Games Pass or something?
Yeah, the all-digital edition, which I believe comes with 3 months of Game Pass and 3 months of Live, is $149 at most retailers. I think Kohl's might have the better deal for it if you shop at Kohl's, because I think it comes with like $50 Kohl cash or something. Mm-hmm. And then there's just a ton of video game deals out, as always. Modern Warfare, which we'll talk about later, that's $40. The new Need for Speed game, which isn't that good, is $40. But there's stuff I've been interested in and have been debating on buying. Like Catherine Full Body is going to be $24 at most retailers. The Disney classics Aladdin and Lion King, I believe I saw it $20 on Switch and $15 for PS4 or Xbox. Kingdom Hearts is going to be $15. There's just a ton of stuff. The Dark Pictures, Man of Medan, that's going to be $15. There's just a ton of stuff, but the most impressive stuff has been some of the deals for the Xbox Digital Edition and PlayStation VR. PlayStation 4 will have a bundle pretty much everywhere, which is the 1 TB plain PlayStation for $200, and it comes with The Last of Us, God of War, and Horizon Zero Dawn.
So if you haven't played any of those games, that's great.
Yeah, that's a great bundle for that. And then the usual Xbox controllers and DualShock controllers are $40. Again, tons of stuff. I'm more interested in the bundles. I say this every year. The Xbox One S, or the Xbox at like $200, is very tempting. The Xbox One S at $149 is also really tempting, but I just don't know. Is it worth to have as a backwards compatible machine? Or should I just stick with my PC with Game Pass?
Old games are old, man. I don't have enough time to keep up with the stuff that's coming out now. I can't go back and play games.
I agree with you. But there's so many old games that I haven't played that... Like right now, I'm playing Dragon Age with Sarah on the PS3. Well, it'd be so much better. Weird. It would be so much better if I was playing Dragon Age on the Xbox, because it's better on the Xbox than it was on the PS3. Because if I want to play an old game, my only option is either to get it on PC and hope it doesn't have games for Windows Live on it, or play the PS3 version, which is always like the inferior version, because this is how it was during the PS3 era.
Yeah, but like, is Dragon Age, as an example, I would ask you, is Dragon Age been upscaled? Has it gotten the Xbox backward compatibility treatment?
It might not have, but it will run significantly better than it does on a PS3. Just because the PS3 wasn't the lead platform during that era, and it struggled a lot with a lot of like games. Like Fallout was horrible on PS3, but that's the only way I played it. And when I try and play it on my PC, which is a very good gaming PC, I can't without modifying it because it's got Games for Windows Live shit in it, and Games for Windows Live is defunct now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tempting just for the backwards compatibility stuff, especially Game Pass is so damn good, and a lot of games are coming to Game Pass on Xbox, but not coming to Games Pass on Xbox PC.
Yeah, I think that's just a matter of time.
Hopefully. but man, $150 for an Xbox One S, like 1 terabyte digital edition, is really tempting because it comes with that 3 months of Game Pass. Or I could just, get it and then just, trade it in later and get like $50 for it. And it's like, okay, I spent $100 to have an Xbox for like a year.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm just gonna keep forgetting until I log in and do it that like the Xbox Game Pass on PC is actually still in beta.
Yeah, it's still in beta. I don't think it's going anywhere though, so I don't think it's gonna be one of those betas.
No, but it's just gonna get better.
Yeah.
Like it's gonna get better, and it's getting so much praise and recognition already right now. It's only gonna get better.
Yeah, it's just a shame it doesn't update as much as it does on Xbox. Which is the only thing that kind of bums me out, is because I get excited because I'll... After Party is a game that I've been talking about that I've been wanting to pick up. I've been wanting to pick that up, and then someone on Twitter was like, hey, it's on Xbox Game Pass. I immediately turn on my PC, can't find it, and then I do a Google search, and it's like, it's only on Xbox Game Pass. And then I look at like the release list for Xbox Game Pass, and it's just like, oh, it's constantly coming out. And then I check the PC release list, and it's like, okay, there's like 3 games this month.
Yeah, there is a some kind of Xbox event going on in Europe, like, coming up this week.
Yeah, that is the 12th to the 14th. They announced their games that are going to be playable. The only thing on there that interested me was I believe the new Ninja Theory game is going to be playable there. Bleeding Cool.
But I started following like the Xbox Game Pass PC Twitter account, and it sounds like that they were teasing some kind of announcements at this event as well.
Okay, maybe that'll be my make or break on if I get an Xbox during Black Friday.
Yeah, I mean, getting the $150 version, the discless or whatever, all digital, is a really interesting concept of, like you said, spending $150 and then just using it as a Game Pass machine, because I think you can get the PC and the Games Pass Ultimate for like $15 a month.
Yeah, you can get the Ultimate Pass.
So and that even gives you like early access to the games as they start coming out. Because I know Gears had some earlier access via Games Pass Ultimate or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a lot of things you can do with that $150 Xbox, which makes it super tempting.
This is not something I always want to try to do just because I think it's harder for audio listeners, but Savage wrote in the chat, Anthem for $9.99, is it worth it? No, hell no, absolutely not.
Damn. Wait, you're going with a hell no.
No.
Okay, put this scenario. You get it for you and like 2 friends.
To be fair, I have not played Anthem probably since 6 weeks post-launch.
They just added snow for winter.
I keep forgetting you can't see me. So.
Okay, yeah, I can't see you.
But it just it lacked the grab, like the loot grab for me, and in terms of knowing what it needs to do and the reason to do things and mechanics and things like that. It literally is harder content just to be harder, possibly to get a better reward, which just means a higher geared item for the same thing you were already doing. That was always my huge problem with Anthem, was an ability or a skill or a weapon that you unlocked at level 5 did exactly the same thing at level 35. it didn't have any more effects. It didn't have any more, you know, yeah, it did increase damage just because it was a higher number. It didn't, like, when you upgraded it up to a masterwork, it had these other percentage things in it that would do, like, linger a little bit longer, but there wasn't any, like, quote-unquote powerful or visual difference. In Division 2, or even the first one, as you got stronger and got, you know, better gear that had higher skills, you felt yourself getting your skills back. You didn't feel yourself getting your skills back. You were getting your skills or your abilities back quicker. You were able to do, you could, you know, see more damage happening. You could see larger explosions and bigger radiuses of more effect of your build happening. And in Destiny as well, like, as you get more powerful or you get better gear, you get your grenade back even faster, or, you know, or your weapon has a larger damage, you know, area, or the exotic weapon does something, like, really cool. Anthem doesn't have any of that.
But as a $10 co-op game,
to play the story, yeah, maybe. But I honestly feel like this is going to be a game in 6 months that BioWare pulls the plug on completely, and it's going to go the route of, like, MAG.
Well, I mean, they already, like, didn't the lead for Anthem just leave, like, 2-3 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're getting really close to that. And that roadmap completely disappeared, right?
They just took it down. Yep.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised.
If you're in, I didn't feel like Anthem's story was that good. I didn't feel like it was told very well. And to be fair, like, Destiny didn't tell their stories very well. Division of the, you know, the quote unquote games as service, Division is probably the best at the storytelling. But I have a hard time recommending it even at that price. So,
okay, fair enough. You hate Anthem. You wanted to like Anthem. You were excited about Anthem, and it disappointed.
But I've always been skeptical of it.
Yeah, like, but you were kind of being like, okay. I mean, you weren't that familiar with BioWare, but you were like, okay, enough people like BioWare.
Yeah.
It looks cool, or it had, you know, like, trailer-wise, it looked cool.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
there's only so far a flying mech can take you.
Yep, and you didn't even like the way the shooting felt. So. Okay, all right. So fuck Anthem. So don't buy it for $10. If someone gives it to you as a stocking stuffer, throw it back in their face. Dave said so. If grandma gets you Anthem, you say, grandma? No. I was going to say something meaner, but no.
All right. We are going to move into our spotlight segment. I'm sorry, not our spotlight segment. We're going to review. We are going to have a conversation about Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Michael has played it more than I have. He's had it longer than me. I do have it now. So.
Yeah. Okay, Dave, you did play the story a little bit?
Yeah, I think, talking to a couple friends of mine, I think I'm probably like 30 or 40% through.
Okay. All right. So Call of Duty this year, Modern Warfare, they're taking it back by rebooting Modern Warfare, which is arguably their most popular one that they've ever had. Kind of started the whole thing. So they're taking it back to Modern Warfare. They're stepping away from all the futuristic technology. You know, no more double jumps, no more wall running. And it's just a straight up old school Call of Duty game with the modern amenities, the improvements they've made over the last couple years. And it has been one of the better multiplayer experiences that I've had this year, even though this year has been good multiplayer-wise. But for Call of Duty, because last year I was a big fan of Black Ops 4, but it was only for the blackout mode, mainly. I could never really get into the regular multiplayer mode. I would dabble in it, and I enjoyed it, but there is no blackout mode in Modern Warfare. It's just the regular multiplayer, the Spec Ops co-op, and then the single-player campaign. But I'm enjoying the multiplayer with its more, like, I keep saying stripped down, but that I feel like that sounds bad.
back to basics.
Yeah, back to basics. They're boots on the ground of just simple kill streaks, gun loadouts, and just the craziness. You know, it's the playlists are pretty much what we're grown accustomed to, and the gunplay has, you know, it's Call of Duty. The gunplay is always good. It's, you know, some of the best gunplay you can find. The multiplayer maps have been all really good so far. They did seem to like have a lot of camp spots, but I don't know if I've just gotten used to it and I know how to play around the maps. When I first talked about this an episode or two ago, I was complaining about snipers, but I also prefaced it with, like, I might not know the maps well enough, and that's where most people are complaining, is those first 2 weeks, is you'll find the sniper nest more than you'll find the rest of the layout of the map, because you'll get used to it and know, like, okay, this is where I'm most likely going to get sniped, this is where I'm not, or I know someone might be upstairs, so let me go upstairs. So the maps I've gotten used to and I've enjoyed. I really like just the regular call, kill streaks system. I'm glad that's like back, and there's no operator, no hero mode. Basically, you know, you just you're more working on your gun, and then getting attachments for your gun, and then just customizing your weapons to your preferences. The other multiplayer modes have been, you know, Ground War, which is their big battlefield mode, which is probably the only thing I don't like about the multiplayer. I just don't know if Call of Duty, like, it's just pure chaos. I don't know if Call of Duty works for pure chaos. It's a different type of chaos than there was in Blackout last year.
I don't feel like the game works with more than 12 players on a map, or even if it's 16, if it's 8-on-8 or whatever it is.
Yeah. This is 32 versus 32 in a map, and it's just too chaotic because you have like people with like, you know, their kill streak stuff going off. You have explosions, you have vehicles, and the sniper issue I feel is an actual problem in this mode. It's where you're just like spawning in random spots and you're just dying constantly unless you find like a good corner to like hunker down in and then just start sniping people. I just haven't found a good balance in the mode. I don't know if it's a map thing or maybe I'm just, you know, getting the bad luck of the draw when it comes to the, you know, different
I can't things. Sit still long enough on a map like that. I get bored. Like, I want to move and I want to see somebody. If I don't see anybody or movement for, you know, 5, 10, 15 seconds, I'm like, I want to go somewhere else.
Yeah, and I think that's a problem is because with Call of Duty, it's kind of just built into your mind of, like, run and gun. So, like, I can sit forever in a Battlefield game because I feel like the maps are better designed for that. But Call of Duty, I'm just like, no. I need to run around and I need to start killing people. And Ground War just doesn't do it for me. And I don't know. I don't like the map design in Ground War. And I just think it's just there's too much going on and it's just not how the game was built or to run. Like, the map either needs to be bigger, but then at that point you're getting into Blackout territory and they don't want to do that, which is understandable. But Ground War is just not doing it for me. I always forget the name of it, the 2v2 mode. That is really fun and is like a really good addition to the game. Just cause it's kind of like just a chess match. Like everyone, you know, starts off with everyone has the same weapons each round, and it's just 2v2, one kill, or like one death, you're out. And the pace that it goes and flows, like you get into matches real quick, matches will end relatively quick, whether they go well or go bad. And there's something addicting about this getting into that playlist and knowing everything.
Rapidly going. Yep.
Yeah. Rapidly going and knowing everyone's on an even playing field. Don't recommend going in that mode alone, because if you're with someone bad, then you're just kind of stuck playing with someone who's going to get killed every 2 seconds. But there is something that's kind of appealing about that, of just like, okay, it's me by myself.
Yeah, 2v1 scenarios, yep.
Yeah, and there's something kind of exhilarating, especially when you come out of a 2v1 victorious. Mm-hmm. That there's something special that mode can capture, which I really enjoy. So that's just like the multiplayer aspect of it. The Spec Ops, which you have to wait till the campaign's over to really get into, that was super broken the first like week Like I would get into matches and fall through the ground, or matches won't load, or people dropping in and out. But the dropping in and out is kind of like a Call of Duty problem. But it's fine. I've never been too big into the co-op stuff with Call of Duty. Just never was into zombies. This is better than zombies in terms of like the co-op experience. I just don't know how I feel about like some of the spawn closets and just the overall structure. I always feel like the co-op mode is just kind of, it's just there to be there to fill it out, and I just have never gotten a full co-op experience from Call of Duty. So I'm just going to brush over that like I kind of brushed over the last couple Call of Duties when they have a co-op mode, or just like, eh, it's there. But what I want to talk to, since Dave at least played like, you know, a little bit close to half of it, is the campaign. The campaign, you know, this is Modern Warfare. It's rebooted. This is basically what we would assume Modern Warfare 1. And just like the multiplayer, you're starting off relatively small in terms of if you played the previous Modern Warfare games. Those games escalated each time into crazier and crazier shit. And this definitely feels like that escalation. And it has its definite highs and definite lows. The game, the storytelling, you know, it's usual, you're after terrorists. You're trying to find a terrorist organization that stole some chemicals from the Russians, and it's just constant story weaving through multiple characters trying to track down these chemicals while you're dealing with like the Russians and you're dealing with the terrorist organization.
Almost slightly confusing which character you are or you aren't at the very beginning.
Yeah, a little bit, until you finally settle in. It's like when you see the main like when you see someone interacting, like when you're working with Farrah, you know who you are. Like, you have to see Farrah to know like which character you are, because you'll see, you know, like the same 2-3 people, you know, with you for a specific character. I enjoyed the campaign for what it was. It's like the usual like 4 to 6 hour campaign. I played it in like two, three sittings.
Nice.
I think the story is, from a gameplay selection standpoint, really good. Some fun scenarios, some bad scenarios, but those are like storytelling reasons why they're bad. One of my favorite Call of Duty scenarios might have been in this game. I won't talk about it too much, but it's, you're basically defending a compound, and I just really like the way that level was structured. I think it has some really cool moments in it. One of the few sniping missions in a Call of Duty campaign that I really enjoyed was a compound level. One of my favorite missions. Other times the game tries to get controversial, either intentionally or unintentionally, and that's where the campaign kind of falters. The campaign at its best is when it is doing the Michael Bay, you know, action movie type stuff. It's really good at that. But other times where it's trying to either be edgy or show you like, you know, like this is war type moments, I don't know if the game can execute. Yeah. Last week I mentioned like a waterboarding section where your character is getting waterboarded, and then you are moving the analog stick to move your head out of the way of the water while, you know, holding your breath by pressing a button. I know what they were going for. It doesn't work. It's not supposed to be fun, but I don't really think I need to be playing that. There are a couple
scenarios where I almost feel like, even early on, where they're like, you're trying too hard to portray this message.
Yeah, you're either trying too hard to portray this message, and they put you in, me and Dave can talk about this a little bit, because I don't know if you've gotten to it. The stuff we saw at E3, did you get to that?
I did. Yeah, I think the last thing that I did, I feel like, and it's been a couple days, is I went through, I want to feel like I was in a hospital with Farrah. And I was like going up the floors a little bit, and and like one guy got up off the table. That's like the last thing that I really remember.
So this game, a lot of the times, tries to do the thing where it puts you in a situation where it's like, oh, this person might be okay. Oh, wait, they have a gun. And they want you to have that snap decision of taking the shot of, like, should you have shot that person? Were they a bad guy? Weren't they a bad guy? Spoiler alert, they're always a bad guy when they put you in that scenario.
I was going to say, it always feels like, and I hate to say it like this from this aspect of it, but it always feels like, at least with a Call of Duty game, it's a shoot first.
It's always a shoot first, but they try and put in the back of your head, like, in the scene, a lot of people know about the scene because it was a lot of talk out of E3. There's, like, a woman holding a baby, and she pulls a gun on you. There's scenarios like that, or, you know, you shoot someone, they're like, oh, I'm okay, but then you find out that they had, like, a detonator, so it's like the soap will tell you, like, it was okay. It was either you or her, and it's just like, okay. They always justify those scenarios when you do take action to kill the person. And if you do, like, shoot a civilian, the game will just quit. It'll fail you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, we don't tolerate civilian casualties, but the game will also still, at the same breath, put you in those scenarios of, like, that person in a hospital bed, looks like they had a gun. Good thing you shot them.
Yeah. See, I would almost rather see something, and saying this out loud is harder, but, like, as you get a mission complete screen, like, maybe even something that says innocent people killed.
Yeah, some sort of consequence to, you know, if they want to do the, like, oh, maybe you shouldn't have done that aspect, maybe let one of those scenarios go wrong, you know, because I feel like that would bring more levity to the situation, then every time it popping up, you're justified in your actions.
Not to the level of, like, what Detroit Become Human did, but something to the level of you doing this affects something else later on, to where it makes it feel like it had some type of substance to it. And to where you said, essentially, if you do something that the game developers are saying is wrong, you get a game over screen.
Yeah, and the game, later on, without spoilers, will, you know, put you in scenarios where it gives you, basically, it feels like decisions, but they're not decisions. There'll be a couple of those in the game where it's just like, ooh, this seems like this would be an important decision. And then in the grand scheme of things, it's not really a decision. The story's going to continue as it was. Which is like, if you're going to put those scenarios in or, like, ask me to make a decision, I would like those decisions to matter. Because then why give me the option anyways?
Mm-hmm.
And it does a lot of that. But saying all that, I still enjoyed the campaign for what it was. I just feel like at times it punches above its weight class. And stuff that they were trying to make controversial and stuff they didn't intend to be controversial, that's going to happen. But I at the end of, like, my 4 or 5 hours with the game, I didn't feel like I wasted my time. I enjoyed it, and I look forward to seeing where they take the Modern Warfare branch of the franchise in the future, especially now it seems like they might be a 2-studio, route or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the campaign, and I do recommend it. But what do you think early on of the story? Because I beat the story, so some of the stuff I'm saying might not know exactly.
I think right when I jumped into it, like, I was having a little bit of a hard time with, like, the very beginning story mission of, like, trying to, like, it was in that, you know, like, you were trying to find the gas, and it was very dark, like, extremely dark, and I died a couple times at the beginning, and I was already could feel myself getting frustrated, and then trying to take it at a slower pace. The thing that's always the most interesting to me is that you play the campaign usually vastly different than you play their multiplayer. So, like, it doesn't really go well together. A lot of times campaigns are really good for teaching you how to play multiplayer and stuff like that, and I feel like Call of Duty's never been that for me. Like, it's just like the campaign is a story, and I think that the voice acting and the cutscenes and all that stuff are very good. The game looks great, and I don't
Oh my god, the game's gorgeous.
Yeah, I don't have a Pro and I don't have a 4K TV or any of that stuff, and it looks great, it runs great, it does all that stuff. So they nailed that aspect, and it's fun to play. But unfortunately for me, with the way I'm, you know, like, I played the story and I was going through it and we were streaming it on our channel, and I was, you know, some people were checking it out, but there, so far there's been no draw for, like, what happens next, like, for me to, like, oh, I need to go play. I want to see the next chapter. I want to see the next thing.
Yeah. I can see that, and I think past Call of Duty games, because I know how short they are, I've been able to just get through in, like, one session.
Yeah.
And this took me, like, 3 sessions to get into. It's just because there were times where I'm just like, eh, okay. I enjoyed that section. The one section I mentioned earlier, the compound section, is the highlight of the game for me, and that's, like, halfway through the game, and nothing before that really hit that high I got from there. Nothing hit that high after that section.
Yeah, the variety of gameplay is there, too, in terms of what it does, different things, of letting you control different aspects of the scenarios. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, taking control of a drone for a little bit, or, like, I had, you know, this very minor spoiler, but I had fun flying those remote control drones.
Yeah, that was a cool section of the game. I'm interested to see when you get later in the campaign, how you feel about some stuff, but the scenarios that they put you in do feel unique to this game, which is good. You know, I mean, you have your sniper scenario and, you know, the usual stuff. I mean, it's a shooting game. There's only so many things they can do, but they do try new things in this game. Some work, some don't. I'd rather them take these chances than not take these chances. But I really liked the campaign a lot, despite my issues that I brought up. We're doing like a 5-point scale, I believe.
Yep.
And this, I would say, is a solid like 3.5 out of 5. I think we need to break down our scale a little bit since it's the first game that we're grading. So basically, a 1 would be skip it. A 2 would be like okay, with some flaws, you know, like, you know, not fully bad, but, you know, not great. A 3 is just average, a 4 is really good, and then a 5 is great. Like, we're keeping the scale pretty simple. We'll if someone wants like a full breakdown of the scale, we can do like a more detailed breakdown of the scale, but I'm gonna go with like a 3.5. I don't think it's the best Call of Duty I ever played. I still think the co-op stuff could be better. The campaign is good, and the multiplayer is good, but I don't know if it's like the best Call of Duty's been in a while. But it's was enjoyable, and I did have fun playing it, and I'm going to continue to play the multiplayer. So I'm going with like a 3.5 out of 5. So it's, you know, like better than average.
They did just add a new game mode and some new maps over the weekend. So
yeah, they, and those are all going to be free, which is great. Yep. Which, as you mentioned at them, it's like, maybe I should go with a 4. But I already said 3.5. So 3.5 is
got to review it for what it was. Is, you know, like at that time, that's what it was.
At the time. Yeah. At the time, 3.5.
Because I feel like they use, sometimes companies use this continued additional content. Should it have been at launch? Maybe. But you know, at the same time, it's a great way of like, oh, I played the multiplayer and I completed the campaign. They set it aside, and then everybody goes, hey, we just got new maps. All right, let me go check it out. And then next thing you know, you're playing it for the whole weekend. Like it's really good marketing. So
Yeah, no, it's definitely gives the game, you know, that longer tail, which means sell more copies long term. And especially when you find out that when they do like expansion packs, each expansion pack sells less than the previous one. So it's just probably better if they just get people to buy in now instead of trying to make money like off expansion packs, which apparently never really work out that well anyways.
All right, so just to let everybody know, we will try to release the review aspects as separate pieces of content on the YouTube channel. So my goal is to take this conversation that Michael and I just had, pull it out of the podcast, not of what you guys are listening to. You obviously just heard it. I will take that, and we'll take some Call of Duty footage, whether it's some footage of Michael playing or some footage of myself playing, and then we'll put this voice over it and put it on to the YouTube channel. And therefore, it could be a way of you sharing that of, hey, like, here's what the guys that I listened to thought about Call of Duty. Listen, you know, check it out. They can watch it on YouTube. And then if they like it, maybe they can subscribe to the channel and then check out the podcast. So that will be the goal. So if you see a review posted on our YouTube channel, please don't be upset that it's the same conversation you may or may not have just heard.
Yeah. Yeah, we're still trying to figure that out. We'll define the scale as we go along, just because we wanted to do a 5-point scale just to keep things a little bit simpler, because with the 10-point scale, it gets too...
I didn't want to score at all, but yeah. all of our conversations with most of the PR companies are like, there needs to be something. So
yeah, which I totally understand. I just didn't want to do a 10-point scale just because I feel like that just leaves too many...
Yeah, because a 10-point scale is really a 20-point scale, and a 5-point scale is really a 10-point scale.
Yeah, and we debated about like a letter scale, but even that, I mean, that's just a number scale, to be honest. Yeah. Like, or that's just a 1-5 scale. So I felt if we keep it simple, that'll be where it's at, and we'll definitely adjust how we do our reviews as we go along. Because, you know, hey, we're, it's just me and Dave. We're just trying to do this on the fly. We're learning as we go.
All right, so we'll go quickly to what we're playing. For me, I started playing on my PC, finally. I started Gears 4, I streamed it. That is a very heavy-feeling game.
Yes, they are very beefy dudes, so it makes sense.
Movement is much different than I expected, with the holding the button to sprint. It just didn't move like other third-person shooters, so it took me a little while to get used to that. I hate the reload on the bumper.
Can probably change that.
You can change the couple of control settings and things like that, but
it wasn't... You have a fancy controller with paddles, right?
I can look at the remapping possibly, but... So, speaking of controllers, if any of you follow me on Twitter, I found some very interesting things that were happening. So, I've been talking about Game Pass and trying to play Outer Worlds on Game Pass and trying to, you know, play these other games. And so, I was like, I really need to do this, make a concentrated effort to do this. And the first challenge I ran into is I plugged my SCUF Vantage, and it works on Steam. On all the games that I've played on Steam, it works fine. It did not recognize it on Xbox app at all. Come to find out, doing a little bit of research, it's technically a licensed PlayStation controller, which is what it is. And so Xbox app on PC doesn't read it at all. I had forgotten that I did have an older SCUF. I don't even know what this one's called. It's just a SCUF with the two paddles on the back. And I plugged that one in, and it I think it's a SCUF Infinity FPS. And it worked. The only problem that I'm running into it from a personal standpoint is that this SCUF has it's built like a DualShock. It has the parallel analog sticks, and it has the four buttons, like even like an Xbox controller does. It's got share button and options. The buttons aren't labeled, so I'm not 100% comfortable with Xbox's layout of A, B, and X, Y. I'm getting better at it, but I struggled with it for a little while.
Okay. X is A, right? B is circle, right? And then X is square and Y is triangle. Because I'm also learning the Xbox layout using a PlayStation controller.
Yeah, so it's working. Gears looked really good on the PC. I did stream it, like I mentioned, other than having a couple of internet terrible crashes that were on my end. It went well, so as I've been experimenting with streaming PC games. So I did have a good time with that. I did dabble a little bit more in Destiny because they made a change to the Pinnacle system of adding as plus twos instead of plus ones. So that definitely helped, but it also, you can already see it speeding up the level grind. So what I said a couple weeks ago about maybe the light level or not going up is seasonally, I feel it will go up now based on how they made this change to it. So we'll see. Like, as we're a month away from a new season, so they should start talking about it pretty soon, because Destiny allowing you to buy the seasons a la carte now at like about $10 a piece, they have to sell the next season to you. So, and the next season will be launching early December, like between like the 8th and the 12th, I think. So, and some people only bought Shadowkeep for the $30 or whatever, and they hadn't purchased the additional content yet. So they need to put something out there that says, hey, this is what your $10 is going to get you on top of the rewards for their new battle pass system or whatever. So, and then other than that, that's all I've played so far. I have started to look into, cause I want to play Jedi Fallen Order. I have started looking into Origins Premiere, which is looks like it's a $14.99 subscription. I want to be really careful that I don't like dig myself too deep into subscriptions, but I also feel like if I only really want to play Jedi Fallen Order, that I could pay $15, and I think I could beat that game in 30 days.
Yeah, you totally should be able to do that.
Yeah, so then I could just pick up Premiere when I needed to or wanted to, if that's a allowable thing. I don't even know. But looking into Origins Premiere, it seems like it's actually got some pretty interesting stuff.
I'm trying to think of the stuff that they have other than Sims and FIFA.
I saw like some of the Batman games on there. Really? The Arkham games, I saw some of those on there. I was watching a couple videos of some things on there. Some of the older Battlefield games are there. The major concern that I have right now is like, I don't have like a super high powered PC, but the, you know, like I said, I've been using the website, Can I Run It?
Mm-hmm.
And I can run like 90% of the games at, you know, recommended settings. All the EA games I can't run at recommended settings. I can run them at minimum.
Mm-hmm. Minimum is basically a PlayStation, a PS4. Right. So quality-wise, wouldn't be that big of a dip.
No, if I can, if the game will run at 1080p 60 frames, like I'll be fine. Like I don't.
But Premiere isn't on PS4. It's just regular Origin, right? Access.
Yeah, EA Access. Yeah, it's okay. Called EA Access, which gets you like the. And they have that same program on PC as well, not just EA Origins, I think it's called on PC, and that gets you like the 10-hour trials and things like that.
Yeah, that's Access, but Premiere is only on PC, so you
right. And Premiere for the $14.99 a month is similar to like a PS Now Games Pass style library. Okay. So, but that's where I'm at with that. So, it looks very interesting. So I probably will check out Premiere. My wife's going out of town next weekend, the same weekend that Jedi Fallen Order comes out. It'll just be me and Owen, so I'll just stick him in the other room and, you know,
play my games. Star Wars is safe for him to watch.
Yes. So what have you been playing, other than COD?
Other than COD, we finished Dragon Age 1. It's funny, we unintentionally finished it on its 10-year anniversary day. Sarah swears she didn't time it out that way. But we finished it like on the 10-year anniversary of the game coming out. And right now we're just doing the DLC. There's like two DLCs that we're going through right now. And then we'll probably jump into Dragon Age 2 probably in a couple days after we do the DLC. Just because I want like a buffer between Dragon Age games. Because I'm the type that can get kind of like overloaded with something. Like I'm not too much of a binge watcher. So I can't play the same thing back to back like that unless it's like something I'm actively controlling, and she's doing most of the controlling or all of the controlling for Dragon Age games. I'm just kind of sitting there for the ride. But I finally use my Xbox Game Pass on PC, for The Outer Worlds. And I am in love with Outer Worlds right now. It is totally scratching that Fallout itch that I just really missed. You know, especially after, you know, Fallout 76.
Scratching a good Fallout itch.
Yes, it's scratching a good Fallout itch, and it's been so good that it made me question how much I actually liked Fallout 4. Because at the time I liked Fallout 4, but over the years. Since Fallout 4 came out, I was just like, maybe I didn't like Fallout 4 as much as I thought, because it didn't leave a lasting impression on me like Fallout 3 did, and Fallout New Vegas, even though I never finished Fallout New Vegas, Fallout 3 and New Vegas left like a lasting effect on me. That Fallout 4, once I was done, I was just kind of done, and I didn't really go back to the DLC or try to do a second playthrough. But Outer Worlds is pretty much the same type of gameplay. Instead of, you know, the VATS where it freezes, slows down time, you just have an ability that slows down time. And their in-world excuse for your ability to do that is your character was frozen and has brain trauma from being frozen and can, in their head, slow down their actions and time enough to do their moves. But the thing that's getting me with Outer Worlds is the the humor, the writing. The writing is so good. And I'm getting, you know, those Fallout vibes. It's Obsidian, so it makes sense I'm getting those Fallout vibes. But just the junky, almost steampunkish type vibe from some of their like space tech. Just like the grittiness of the world just immediately gives me like Firefly vibes, which Firefly is one of my favorite shows of all time. And just the humor is just hitting me like every time. I'm like 4 or 5 hours in, and there haven't been too many times where I'm like rolling my eyes at the jokes, where like most of the jokes are hitting, like 99% of the time the jokes are hitting for me. And the combat is okay. It's stiff, like the Obsidian games have been in the past, like how New Vegas was when they, you know, made New Vegas. So the combat, it is what it is, but as someone who's been playing Fallout for a long time, or, you know, since like Fallout 3, the combat is kind of on par with that, if not a little bit better. The main reason it's better is Outer Worlds, at least in my experience, has not been as, it actually hasn't been broken at all. It has been like really good, in terms of like the technical abilities of the game. I'm not running into frame rate issues. The game hasn't broke on me. I haven't had any quest break on me. I haven't had basically any of the Bethesda shit that I've just have grown accustomed to dealing with. Everything's been pretty smooth. I am playing it on a PC, running it on ultra settings, so that is probably helping a lot. But I'm just having so much fun diving into this type of RPG again. And the idea that it is, you know, not as big as a Fallout would be, that it's something I can probably finish in 20 to 30 hours, is really appealing to me. Mm-hmm. Just because I just don't want to dive into a 100-hour game right now, though I did buy Death Stranding. I did impulse buy when I was at a store. I was just like, fuck it, let me buy Death Stranding to see what it's about, which I'll probably start this week. And knowing that that is like a 60-hour game or more scares the shit out of me. So I'm just going to enjoy Outer Worlds for like the 20, 30 hours it's going to take. And just I'm along for the ride for that game. And it's just been like a breath of fresh air, even though it's, you know, kind of something I'm used to. It's a nice break from like all the multiplayer games and the Super Series games that I've been playing lately. But yeah, I'm enjoying that. It's making me learn how to do translate the Xbox control scheme, because I'm using my Astro controller for that.
Okay.
So I'm getting used to everything. Just, you know, plug in my Astro controller. There's my furnace, if anyone can hear that, because it might have just gotten colder. Though I have noticed something with my Astro controller that's super concerning. My Astro controller makes an annoying humming sound every time it rumbles.
You might want to check and see if it rumbles like inserted correctly. Like if it's like it might have got loose.
No, I can't. I don't believe I can take the rumblers out.
Really?
Yeah. The only thing I can take out are the sticks and the D-pad.
Are you sure you can't take the rumble out?
I can turn it off.
Oh, okay.
That's about it. It's one of those things where I didn't notice it at first. Because I always play with headphones, but Sarah was like, what is that humming sound? And then I took my headphones off and I'm like, oh, my controller, every time it rumbles, is making a really weird humming sound.
Was it charging at the time?
It was charging at the time, but it does it no matter what.
Okay.
So I lowered it to 50% and the humming is, you know, now 50% quieter, but it's there. I did look online. It seems like I found like a Reddit thread where one or two people had this issue, but most people didn't. So I need to look into that. Like, I already updated the firmware. I'm worried there might be something wrong with my Astro. So I'm going to have to like look into that, but it's definitely one of those things where I heard the humming and I'm just like, oh man.
If nobody told you that it was doing that, you would have never really thought about it.
Yeah, like I honestly might not have never noticed because I always play with headphones. But now that I know it's humming,
so it's her fault.
Basically, yeah. Where now that I know it's humming, it's just like, oh no, is this a bad sign that it might be breaking down? So I'll keep you guys posted as I try and figure out what's going on there. I already updated the firmware, so if anyone suggests doing that, I already did that. But hopefully maybe it goes away. I don't know. I might take it apart, not like the whole controller, but I might just like reset like the pieces. Maybe something there is happening. But I'll keep you guys posted on what's going on with my Astro controller, because I love it so much. Such mm-hmm. a good controller. Awesome. But yeah, that's it. And I've just been counting down the days till Disney Plus, which is on the 12th. So I'm making my playlist already of what I want to watch when Disney Plus launches. I'm so excited. Dave, are we going to start a Lizzie McGuire podcast?
It's patreon.com/digitaldaysgaming.
Okay, cool. So you heard it. You will do a Lizzie McGuire podcast.
All right. So I inadvertently, still trying to get in the rhythm, inadvertently put my spotlight of Origins premiere into my what I'm playing and watching. So that was kind of my spotlight. So I'm going to kind of, I know you just talked, but do you have anything that you're looking forward to? So for Disney me, my Plus. Spotlight. Yeah. Okay. So Disney Plus and my spotlight, the more I've seen a little, I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, but I feel like I'm ready. Like I want to check this game out, and I want to be, you know, it sounds like as we're getting a little closer that this game might be, we have a question later, but this game might be in a game of the year contender, and I really need to catch up on some stuff in order to have a good conversation about this. I need to play Control. I need to play, you know, or figure out what I'm going to play to bring these nominees, or not even necessarily our nominees, but
yeah, for us to have like a discussion on that. That's why Black Friday is going to be super important this year, because it's a good time to pick up some games.
What you don't hear in the background is, you know, 20 feet away from me is that brand new hot water tank I had to get last week. That's going to affect my Black Friday.
Yeah, yeah. You tell me about the water tank, and I was like, damn, that sucks.
Hot water's important. Hot water's expensive.
Yeah, turns out it's really important in the winter. And my furnace, my new furnace, new apartment is working overtime already, and it's only November 10th. But yeah, I'm looking forward to Disney Plus. You're looking forward to Star Wars. Star Wars is Friday, correct?
Yeah.
The 15th? Okay. Yeah. Same day as Pokemon?
Yeah. See, a Switch. And, oh, by the way, I was doing some research on this. There's some family members that are trying to possibly buy a couple of my nephews a Switch and stuff like that. That Mario Kart 8 bundle, if you guys are looking at that Switch, stay away from that. That's the older SKU.
Yeah, I have a feeling all of the Switch sales are going to be the older SKU, and they're just going to hide the new SKU.
Yeah, so just, it's got the worst battery.
Yep, which is the one I have, but now
it's... Yeah, I'm not saying it's bad, but if there's two different versions out there,
yep,
you want the one with the better battery. Get the one with
battery. So. Yeah. Or get the Switch Lite, if you don't want to dock it.
Right. My hands can't deal with a small handheld.
I know, and it's even smaller. Yeah.
All right, so we're going to jump into our question. So hashtag Ask Digital Days on Twitter. We put some posts on Facebook, in the Facebook group as well. I believe you can join our Facebook group just by searching Digital Days Gaming. You can request to join. Michael or myself will approve you. And that's a group that we just want to have, you know, conversations. If you see something you want us to cover on the podcast, post it there. If there's, you know, if you have questions or, you know, anything like that, just to have a conversation. Just want a place for everybody to kind of hang out. It seems like there's a higher group of people on Facebook at the moment. Twitter's been great as well. YouTube, all that support's there. Just Facebook has a little bit, you know, the groups are a little easier than trying to, like, to have a conversation in Twitter. That's a huge long thread with people jumping in and jumping out. But you can use hashtag Ask Digital Days like Steven Wren did. Which do you prefer, Budweiser or Coors? For me, it's Budweiser just because it's just accessibility. Like, I know it's there. I don't remember the last time I had any Coors.
Shocking. I think beer is nasty. I am a rum or bourbon guy. If I have to have some sort of alcoholic beverage in a bottle or something.
He likes White Claws. It's okay, guys.
No, I was going to say cider, like Angry Orchard, would be my go-to. If like a place has a cider, I would prefer a cider over a Budweiser or Coors. I just think it just tastes like, I don't know, like weird water. So if I'm going to have weird water, it's going to be White Claw. So White Claw is my second go-to, but usually if I'm gonna get a beer like thing, I'm gonna get a cider, and Angry Orchard's my go-to.
So what's your top of your wish list for a bourbon?
I don't know what's a good bourbon. I just get like mixed drinks. I just look for like the most colorful mixed drink on the menu, and then I get it. I went to a place yesterday, like a tiki bar in Chicago called Three Dots and a Dash, and I just looked at whatever cup had like, or whatever drink had like the most like pineapple in it, and it just said rum, and I was like, give me that. And that's how I will do all my drinks. If I'm going to like an actual bar and getting cocktails, I'm just gonna be like, get me something with a bunch of fruit in it and rum, and I'm good. If it has an umbrella, fantastic. But otherwise, I'll just take a cider.
You want to read the next question, since I don't know anything about it?
Oh, okay. Main Terry asks, how stoked are you for Survivor Series now that NXT is involved? And how about that SmackDown invasion? So a little background on this for Dave. The WWE did a show on Halloween in Saudi Arabia.
Again?
And yeah. So that was on a Thursday. They had to be in Buffalo, New York on a Friday to do SmackDown Live. Their plane got delayed several hours, so none of the superstars that were in Saudi Arabia that were advertised for that SmackDown the next day couldn't make it. So then they had to call they had to throw a show last second together, and then they had basically all the NXT guys that were like their developmental guys just do a show on SmackDown Live, and it turned out to be really good, and they were able to spin that into like a really cool like storyline and angle, and it was entertaining as all hell. Survivor Series is in Chicago this year. WWE is running four shows in Chicago and basically in a row, where it's like Friday is SmackDown, Saturday is NXT, Sunday is Survivor Series, and then that Monday is Monday Night Raw. I got excited enough that I bought tickets for NXT on Saturday, and I'm super looking forward to, because I haven't been to a show since Backlash 2002. So it's been a long time since I've been to a WWE show. So I'm super excited for like that Survivor Series weekend, because I get to go to a wrestling show, and I haven't been to a wrestling show in forever. And it'll be Sarah's first wrestling show. She was a fan of wrestling when she was a kid and always wanted to go to a WWE show but never could. So it's going to be her first time going to a wrestling show, and I have to prepare her for all the wrestling shenanigans. Especially the Chicago crowds are really interesting and really fun. So I got to like prepare her for all the dumb shit that is going to happen at a wrestling show.
All right. Kyle Jesse, worst video game you ever played and actually enjoyed? His example is Halo, and he says, no lie.
Halo's a good game.
So, worst game that you ever played and actually enjoyed?
It's not Anthem for you.
I can't really think of anything right now. Like, I saw this question pop up, and I was even trying to think about it before. I've been pretty, I guess, maybe lucky that I haven't really, even in our past life, never got like what I thought to review like a terrible, terrible game. What's it called? I kind of enjoyed it because I could see what it was trying to do. Oh man, what was that called? Do you remember the game that it was like a hack and slash game that you had to fight like the ogres? But like you were kind of blitzing through them, and it had weak points.
It was an Iron Galaxy game.
Yeah. Man, I can't remember the name of that game, but that game had so much potential for, and it just didn't work. Like I kept glitching into the big, you know, the big ogres that I was fighting, or the gladiators that I was fighting. Jeez.
I'm looking it up. Don't worry.
Yeah. It had a really Extinction, yes, that's it. It had a really cool like traversal aspect and climbing up the characters and hitting weak points, and it rewarded you when you did things correctly, but the game punished you because you couldn't do it correctly, because it like the screen would flip on you and things like that. It was when it worked, I had so much fun, but it hardly ever worked.
My answer is easy because I've talked about it before. Rogue Warrior on the PS3, Xbox 360 is one of my favorite terrible games. It's only like 2-3 hours long. It is a horrible first-person shooter, which is supposed to be kind of a biography of Dick Marchenko, who was, I guess, a Navy SEAL during the 80s. And it is terrible. Mickey Rourke is the voice actor for Dick Marchenko. And Mickey Rourke is just... his whole script is just curse words. Like, he's saying the dumbest combination of curse words that I've ever heard. The acting is bad. The game is glitchy as all hell. But it is one of my favorite games to play, because it is so bad. And
but you like bad things. Like...
yes, I do enjoy bad things. Which I should probably give Anthem a shot. I can't recommend Rogue Warrior enough. If you see it for $1 somewhere ever, it is really one of Bethesda's best games.
Oh, it's a Bethesda game.
They didn't make it, but they published it. I believe it's a Rebellion game.
Really?
But Bethesda published it. It's so bad. It's so good. If you want to ever like just get like a taste for what it's like, there's two things you can look up. The first thing is, this is how in on a joke the developers are. The end credits, they made a mashup rap of all the curse words that Mickey Rourke says in the game. They made a song and put that as the end credits of the game. And the other thing you can look up, Giant Bomb has one of my favorite quick looks of the game. So if you look up Giant Bomb's quick look of Rogue Warrior, it's fantastic, and it's pretty much everything you need to know about the game. So if you need a little homework, look up Giant Bomb's quick look of Rogue Warrior, and then look up the end credits of Rogue Warrior. It's fantastic.
Okay. All right, so last question of the night from Libitsky. With about 2 months left until the end of the year, what are your top three games of the year so far? For me, it's Days Gone, Concrete Genie, and Control. Got to give love to Resident Evil 2 and The Outer Worlds, though. Sadly, I don't really feel like I've been super up to date on a lot of the games that came out. I haven't played Control yet. I played Days Gone, but I didn't go back to it. I didn't get Concrete Genie. A significant amount of time for me was in Far Cry New Dawn was this year, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
So from, you know, like there was a lot of early on in the year, it was Far Cry New Dawn, it was Division, The Division 2, then it was Anthem, and then it was Destiny 2, in terms of like significant time of gameplay for me. And but I'm going, you know, I've got some work to do over the next couple of weeks to at least get some time into some games to check out. So Control's on the list, and I want to hook my PSVR back up now that I'm kind of a little bit more settled into my desk and my setup with my stuff. So I've got some things to do, and I know that you guys don't always want to talk about Destiny, although it's a comfort food game for me to go back to and play when I sit down and I don't have to think. So that's kind of where that game fits in for me. But I do want to play Control. I'm not sitting there saying I'm going to beat all these games, but I want to get some time with them.
Mm-hmm. I actually put together a top 10 list a couple weeks ago. Mine is number 3's Concrete Genie. That game is it's got a whimsy about it. It's like super like delightful and colorful, and I really loved it. Number 2 is A Plague Tale Innocence, which is a game that I knew I was going to like when I saw it at E3 a couple years ago, and I saw it like 2-3 E3s in a row, but it exceeded my expectations. I wasn't expecting to like it so much that I would consider it like one of my top 3 games of the year. Like, it's going to be in my top 3 most likely, regardless of the other games I'm going to play for the rest of the year. because it's so good. It had me on like a, like I bought into the characters and the story, and the gameplay was like interesting and fun. And the number one is Control. Control is just, I like weird games. Control is weird. It has an amazing visual style that I adore. And I really think it was the developer's name is escaping me, but it is like their best work, because a lot of their previous games, like Alan Wake, Quantum Break, I like those games. But there was always something missing, and I feel like Control is like them finding their groove and just really executing on all their ideas. And I can't recommend Control enough. And Dave, I know you own Control, so mm-hmm. I would love to see your thoughts on it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that I want to play. I mean, I was always intrigued by it from the beginning, and it just came at a weird time for me because it came right around the launch of D2, so, or Shadowkeep. So
yeah.
All right. So, yeah, I just went back to look at Premiere again just to make sure, like, I wasn't crazy. Like, they do have some interesting deals, though, with some of these companies. Like, Darksiders 3 is on here. Titanfall 2 is on here. The Batman game, Arkham Collection, is on here. Like, A Way Out. I haven't played A Way Out yet. There's Sea of Solitude. The Need for Speeds. The Plants vs. Zombies. So, there's a, you know, and there's a significant amount of things on here. Some of them actually don't have the included with Premiere when I look at them. Dead Space. I never played a Dead Space game.
Those are good.
Yeah. Battlefront 2. A couple of my friends have been playing the hell out of Battlefront 2. They've added a ton of stuff to it, and it sounds like
it's got Bad Company. You should play Bad Company.
Yeah. So I'll have to, you know, check this out. It might be, you know, worth picking up randomly now and then. So. So the social stuff, like we said before, you can follow Michael at FirstMJC. You can follow myself at GoodDaveHunt. You can follow our main account at DigitalDaysPod. Please join the group. Please subscribe to YouTube. Please check out Patreon and give us feedback on it. And then when we get our Twitch affiliation, we'll be sure to tweet that out. I know a couple of you guys have already tweeted at us that you're waiting for your subscriptions that you have with Amazon Prime. We appreciate that. So we are trying to get affiliated as soon as possible. This is, I think, requirement, like we're like 95% of the way there, so then we'll hit the requirements this week, and then we'll see how long it takes for Twitch to give us the affiliation, and then we'll go from there. If I've seen some feedback about the live show maybe being a little bit too late and things like that, it's just another avenue for us to be there. If you can't be here to watch the show live on Twitch, like, that's okay. It's just another avenue of importance for us to spread our content, which is why we're doing Twitch and we're doing YouTube and we're doing the audio. So we're trying to kind of, like, you know, paint with a very broad brush for everybody. So please don't feel like you have to, you know, like, I don't, you know, that's a lot of pressure to watch it on Twitch and then get a view on YouTube and also download your thing. Just whatever works. I just wanted, yeah. We wanted to make sure that we covered all the bases. If you want to watch a show live, like, watch the show live. I'm aware of, you know, there's NFL games on Sunday nights, there's playoffs, and then, you know, sometimes people hang out with their families on Sundays. People go to bed early because they're, you know, Mondays suck for them. Like, that's fine. If you want to watch it on YouTube, I know, like, sometimes watching a YouTube at work is more doable. So anywhere that you can consume the content, we appreciate it. And then if you are able to support us in any way possible through financial means or anything else, like, that's always appreciated. But the most important thing is that you're here, you're interacting with us, and you are enjoying the content that we're producing. So feedback is always important to us. And however you're consuming our content, we appreciate it and we thank you for it.
And I just want to add, if we are not on a podcast service, please let us know. I was notified that we weren't on two services yesterday, and I was able to get us on those services within a couple hours. So if there's a platform that you subscribe to podcasts on and you can't find us on that, let me know and I will see if I can correct that and get us on that platform as soon as I can.
Yeah, but we don't know. So please don't feel bad telling us something. I think one of them was Podbean, and we were able to take care of Podbean pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know, Michael's done a fantastic job setting everything up, and the services that he's found that we use are much simpler than anything that I've ever been used to, and it's ironically called Simplecast. And just to give you guys a little bit of a perspective of ways that you can help us, the dollar tip jar on Patreon, if you sign up for that, so that's essentially $12 a year. That pays for one. If you become a dollar Patreon for us, you essentially take care of 1 month of podcast hosting for us.
Yes.
So just to give you guys a little bit of a perspective of where it's going. So other than that, like, again, any support is greatly appreciated. Somebody mentioned like maybe throwing a $3 tier in there. If we throw a $3 tier in there, I would love to hear what you guys would like to see as a compensation for that. So, but again, it's all we're building the foundation here, and you guys are part of building that foundation, and we appreciate the support and the outreach that everybody's done for us over the last whatever today is. Like, it's this project's only like not even 3 weeks old, 2 weeks old.
Yeah.
So, you know, it feels like it's been a crazy, crazy ride. But I mean, obviously we were working on it before we launched it, but we do want to hear your guys' feedback on what you like, what you don't like, you know, feedback on the reviews, feedback on the format, anything like that. So, but please, you know, comment on the YouTube, tweet at us, comment on Facebook, like the Facebook page. There's more people in the group than have liked the page. So please like the page. Other than that, I hope everyone has a great week. And we will talk to you guys next Sunday live on Twitch, twitch.tv/digitaldays.
Yep. Dave's going to watch Lizzie McGuire. It's going to be fun.
I have a 4-year-old. I can use it as an excuse.
Exactly. Get in on this. I think all three Mighty Ducks are going to be on it. It's going to be great. See you guys.